Imagine that unbelievable new deck in your backyard. Outdoor Living Unlimited is Wisconsin's number one TimberTech deck builder. Building new decks and replacing old ones, creating that million-dollar feeling every time you relax in your own backyard. Looking for a company to make your backyard scream wow? Stop by Outdoor Living Unlimited's resourceful Waukesha showroom and visit OutdoorLivingUnlimited.com.
It's time for some fresh air, so start packing, put on some sunscreen, and grab your favorite walking stick. This is WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Welcome to another edition of WTMJ Outdoors. I am Steve Scafidi. This is, of course, all possible because of the great folks at Outdoor Living Unlimited. We've got a great guest today, Jeff Pritzel. I've had a bunch of guests from the Wisconsin DNR. This one is especially close to my heart because I'm a gun deer hunter in the state of Wisconsin. And Jeff is the deer program specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Welcome to WTMJ Outdoors, Jeff.
Hey, Steve. Glad to be here.
All right, so let's talk about some of the things that are going to happen in the fall. I love gun deer season. I was talking to Paul Smith on an early episode about some of the things that were happening with the population. Let's start with a more general one. How is the Wisconsin deer population, white-tailed deer?
In general, the deer herd is doing really well in as much as we're coming off of our second consecutive mild winter. And that's really a factor specifically up north where their herd is driven more by winter conditions. So they've got two mild winters, good deer productivity, and so we had a decent harvest last year, so the reason to be optimistic for this year as well. In the rest of the state, as has been the case really for decades, you know, the deer herd is robust and we're challenged with getting enough deer harvested on the landscape. But the real challenge is those deer are as abundant as they are, they're not evenly distributed on the landscape. So not everyone has an equal opportunity to access them.
So I know that the area that I hunt in, which is Waupaca County, has traditionally had a very high deer population. You just mentioned the fact that it's sort of spread out, not necessarily all spread out equally. Talk a little bit about where the deer are at, maybe in some of the areas where they're not.
Yeah, no, that's great just to be aware of that. Because, yeah, Waupaca County probably has some of the highest deer densities in the state, if not the country. And even when we look at the deer harvest statistics, we're harvesting more deer per square mile in that general part of the state, Waupaca, Washera, Green Lake, Marquette County, than just about anywhere else. But even in those areas, there are people that have access. The land that they're hunting is maybe not as marginal. It's not the best deer hunting quality, but it's what they have access to. And their experience could be totally different. And so, you know, we might say the average deer density in Waupaca County is 50 or 60 deer per square mile, but that means there could be 100 to 120 deer per square mile in one area and 10 in another. And if you're trying to hunt in that area that's only got 10 deer per square mile, it's a very different experience.
Oh, yeah, right.
And it's really driven by the combination of food sources along with cover and bedding cover and how that lays out on the land. And so there's can be some areas that have great food but very little cover, or vice versa, and deer are not going to frequent that area as much.
I shared the story after last gun deer season, and I've been hunting the same spot, the same 100 plus acres for 50 years since I was a kid. And for the first time ever in Waupaca County, I went through opening weekend and never saw a deer. That's never happened to me before. And obviously, there's the random chance you're going to have a season like that. It was the weirdest thing, because I just remember talking to, I think it was Paul Smith from the Journal Sentinel, about the fact that that was a very populous deer county in the state. It was just the most random thing ever, but it happens to everybody, I guess.
Well, that's just it. When you've got 600,000 people participating, even in the best year, you're going to have tens of thousands of people that have a different experience, and it's not going to align with, you know, with the averages. And hunting strategy has changed a lot as well over the last couple of decades, to where we tend to have a more sedentary approach. We sit and wait, pick what we think is a good spot, and let the deer come to us, mm-hmm. as opposed to getting out on the ground and moving the deer, which was traditionally a very common technique. So we're much more dependent on natural deer movement during the gun season than we used to be. And if the deer just aren't in the mood to move for whatever reasons or conditions, there still could be a bunch of deer, and you're just not going to see them because they're not moving on their own for a number of different reasons.
Jeff Pritzel from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Deer Program Specialist joining us on WTMJ Outdoors. I know that you mentioned in our sort of our pre-show conversation there's going to be some changes for the management units when it comes to the deer season. What are those?
Yeah, so the biggest change for this year is in the forest zones. The state's divided into four zones, the northern and central forest, and then the central and southern farmland zones. And in the forest zones, specifically the larger northern forest, we've totally realigned the deer management units in response to feedback we've been hearing over the past decade. 10 years ago, we had habitat-based units. We went to a county-based system 10 years ago. And now we're going back to a habitat-based system in the northern forest specifically. Those units are not the same as they were 10 years ago. In some cases, they're similar, and in a few cases, they're the same. But hunters that do hunt up north, because this affects where and how you get your antlerless bonus tags, they're going to want to plug in and know what the new unit boundaries are. They're numbered units now instead of named by the county. And so they'll have to get familiar with what unit they're hunting in, and if they want an antlerless bonus tag when it comes time to purchase those in August, they'll need to know, you know, what their new unit number is.
Any other changes with sort of the rules of the hunt coming up this season?
Not really for this fall. It should be pretty much the same as folks have encountered in recent years, other than in addition to the northern forest, the central forest zone saw some amendments to the boundaries of the units, and we also changed the name of those units to numbers as opposed to the county name. And so folks in the central forest as well will need to become familiar with what's the number of my new deer of my deer management unit, so they know which unit to select their antlerless tag for.
We're talking to Jeff Pritzel, deer program specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. We'll take a break here on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Lots more to get to on the program after this on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Continue our conversation with deer program specialist Jeff Pritzel. He's from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources on WTMJ Outdoors. All right, so I'm always interested in not just talking about your expertise, your areas of expertise, Jeff, but how you got to be able to do what you do. So almost everyone that I've talked to, not just at the Wisconsin DNR, but wherever I've talked to people on this show, whether that's charter captains or hunting guides or resort owners, they always have an interesting story. What's your interesting story? How did you get to be able to do what you do every day?
Well, probably like a lot of, you know, DNR staff that are either in wildlife or fisheries or forestry, I had, you know, childhood exposures to that outdoor lifestyle, very involved and interested in hunting and fishing, and it, you know, drove me towards pursuing a career in wildlife management. I was fortunate that I lived close to Stevens Point, which has a you know, nationally famous university for natural resource careers, and went to school there, and was fortunate that the department picked me up coming out of school, and I've worked for the DNR ever since, which is going to be 35 years this summer.
Wow.
And I spent most of my this part of my career working with the deer program is actually kind of a late almost like an encore career within my career. I spent the first half of my career as a field biologist, and I was much more focused on waterfowl and wetlands. And then I was a supervisor for about 14 years, kind of overseeing all aspects of wildlife management, and really got involved in deer being stationed in Green Bay, just an area that got a lot of attention. And I did a lot of work with annually with the deer seasons and stuff. And when the opportunity came to take over the deer program, it was really in mind of not so much my interest. I'm always careful not to say I'm the deer ecologist or the deer expert. There's a bunch of people in the state that know more about deer than I do. But my role is really working with the constituency, working with the deer hunters, working with the Conservation Congress, people I've been working with for decades, to help them navigate the annual process of setting the deer season up. And then we also foresaw that some changes were going to be coming down the pike. What we talked about earlier with the deer management units, I was just in a position, having worked with the folks that would be involved with this most of my career, to kind of help them navigate these changes. And so I've been doing that for the last 4 years. again, more as a reflection of my relationship with the Wisconsin Conservation Congress and the hunting community, rather than being, you know, the deer expert in the state.
One of the things that people always ask me whenever I talk about the deer hunting in Wisconsin, either on the show or away from the show, is, do you think we'll ever see a change to the 9-day gun deer season in Wisconsin? I know it's a traditional, it's always at the same time. It ends it starts the weekend before Thanksgiving, ends after. Do you think we'll see a change to that at some point?
Well, the word you used in describing it as tradition, you know, is a big part of why it has been assumed to be kind of locked in. And it has been that way for a long time. And I would say that the input I'm getting to potentially look at changing that is growing. But whether it ever gets to the point of being the majority opinion or not, I think remains to be seen. And it also needs to be pointed out that that specific parameter is set in state statute, not in the DNR's administrative code. So the department doesn't have the purview to go to the public and potentially change that. That actually has to happen through legislative activity and a statute change. So if the public was interested in that, to the point they really have to work with their elected officials to push that change. And interestingly, now of our 600,000 deer hunters in the state, over half of them are archers as well as gun hunters. And so those that are exclusively gun hunters, exclusively participate in that gun deer season, really aren't a majority anymore. And so, you know, and if the archery community, you know, wants to keep that earlier November period, you know, to archery hunting, the exclusively gun hunters would have to really, you know, do a lot of, you know, communication and work for the advantages to get that to change again, because it would have to play out as a statutory change. It's not something the department can change.
Interesting. I talked to one of the local bull hunting chapters in Wisconsin, and yes, that area of hunting, that concern is certainly rising, and that's a good thing. You know, part of any successful hunting, fishing experience is that it does evolve over time. I spent some time recently talking with some journalists about some of the technology changes in fishing, and maybe we'll see those in hunting, in deer hunting, maybe we won't. I'll maybe just ask you the question. Have we seen technology changes impacting the deer hunt in Wisconsin? I know the archery, the bows are way better and more accurate. On the gun side, has much changed?
Well, probably the biggest technological change has been the advent of trail cameras.
Oh yeah,
and they're used, you know, pervasively now, you know, across the state to not by everybody, but over half of hunters, I believe, have acknowledged that they use trail cameras as part of their hunting strategy. So what they're observing remotely on the properties in the areas that they're checking out influences their strategies and their decisions. And one of the things we often are seeing now, and hunters have become more selective in their harvest. And part of that is driven because they have trail camera documentation of a particular deer that they've captured on camera. And that becomes their objective. So they're much more inclined to pass up other harvest opportunities, knowing that a particular deer might be in the area. And there's an understandable attraction to that and an upside to it. But actually, from the department's perspective, it can have a negative influence on the overall harvest. And so we're seeing that, where the harvest trajectories, our total numbers that we always pay attention to at the end of the year, are less, they're not as parallel to the actual changes in the deer population as they used to be, and now are more influenced by both hunter selectivity and hunter effort that is changed over time. And so we may see a decline in actual harvest, but it's because hunters have become more selective in what they're pursuing, as opposed to a reflection in a declining deer population.
Yeah, and I'm probably part of that problem as well, because I have admittedly become a lot more selective. It used to be an annual harvest. Now it's every few years. And frankly, I haven't shot a buck in probably, God, more than 6 or 7 years. And as I said before, I hadn't seen one. Last thing, because I always want to make sure that we talk about this, because I think this is important, and a lot of people ask about it. Chronic wasting, any changes in that storyline since last year or the years before that?
Well, there's not a change in procedure or policy, and the goals in getting samples annually in order to continue to monitor how that disease is changing. The biggest change right now is an awareness of information as a result of a long-term study that the department conducted along with UW-Madison and some others over about a five-year period that has documented that in the core area of the state where the disease is the most prevalent, is the worst. We're talking Iowa County, Sauk County, Richland County, and in that general area, that after 20 years now, we are seeing that the disease is causing mortality in the adult doe population to the degree that it is suppressing the overall deer population. And so it's kind of the case to say, hey, this is why you don't want to see chronic wasting disease continue to elevate in your area, because at some point in time, if you hit that threshold of prevalence, it will start to negatively impact your deer population. Now, that doesn't mean, and the irony is people say, well, then we need to back off on harvest to compensate for that. And actually, the opposite is true. We need to continue to hunt deer, harvest deer in those areas. And it's continuing. But that is kind of the point of emphasis, is that those areas, you know, need, you know, continual deer harvest, and especially antlerless deer harvest, because if we're not harvesting them through the hunting season, it's just shifting the mortality to chronic wasting disease, and that's not good for the deer or us.
Great information. Let's make a plan to talk in advance of the fall when we start getting out there for the archery and gun deer seasons. Jeff Pritzel, deer program specialist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for the opportunity. We'll talk to you this fall.
Lots more coming up on WTMJ Outdoors, sponsored and presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. I always think about this when I'm thinking about the outdoors and my definition. For me, the definition includes everything that happens outdoors. So we're going to talk about some interesting things happening at Wisconsin State Fair Park, and of course that's the Wisconsin State Fair and the Milwaukee Mile, but we want to start it off with the fair, and joining us is Director of Marketing and Communications for the fair, Tess Kirkson. How are you, Tess?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. So let's start with the Wisconsin State Fair, it is my favorite thing of the summer. It begins July 31st, I believe, at the State Fair Park grounds there, right off of 94 East-West. So, easy question, what's new this year?
Oh, it feels like what isn't new out there. There's such a hustle and bustle at the fair park right now. Not only are we redoing the original cream puff building, which will now be called the Dairy Building, kind of going back to its old name, this space is going to be completely renovated. We're also redoing our North Point, which is a huge spot for livestock traffic, food traffic up Grandstand Avenue. It's a really great meeting hub. And a few bathrooms were getting redone. It's just the whole place looks like it's had this huge refresh. It's so cool.
All right. So you had me at the Cream Puff Building, Dairy Building. I was a big fan of the original, which most people are. And then you had me on Strawberry for a bit. And now this, what you call decadent chocolate cream puff, is is going to have to be my go-to. This is sort of a cool evolution of the cream puff story.
Absolutely. And it all really started during the pandemic in 2020, when we started doing some flavors. We started doing drive-throughs, and then really born out of that innovation and inspiration came, how can we get that to State Fair? And now with the restrictions of the old bakery that we had, that bakery was, the building's over 100 years old. And so not the bakery necessarily, but it needed some upgrades. It needed this state-of-the-art technology, and we were able to get that and complete. I mean, people are going to be blown away when they go into this building. And with that, the state-of-the-art kitchen that allows us to actually dabble in some flavors during the 11-day run of the State Fair, when typically you'd only be able to get that original cream puff.
Yeah, and you sell over 350,000 cream puffs each year on average at the fair. Other food stuff, I know about the Sporkies and the Drinkies. That's how many years has that been going on now?
This is our 12th year of the Sporkies. And in Drinkies, we added when it was 10 years old, so a couple years old, and they're fantastic items. You'll see a lot of brats on there this year. That is a big theme. I always feel like the vendors, they always have these food trends that they go with. Last year was a lot of pickle things. This year's a lot of brat things. And it's all just really fun. It always comes back to Wisconsin. and has that Wisconsin flair to it, which is probably my favorite part about it.
All right, nothing says outdoors like our great animals, and animals are certainly part of the great State Fair experience. Ag industry, huge in Wisconsin. Anything different happening in the ag buildings? I always take that walk around when I'm working at the Fishbowl at WTMJ, our studios on the Fair Park grounds. What's going on there?
Yes, we have our fantastic exhibition shows. Of course, one of my favorites, which is a little bit lesser known, is when the drill team comes. They all kind of dress up and they really, you know, play, just do amazing things with their animals. It's mainly a horse show. And it's really incredible to see. That's one of my favorites. And then, of course, Camp of Champions, which comes out of the Governor's Blue Ribbon Livestock Auction winners. That's always just a really impactful thing to watch, to see these kids who have raised their animals. They do for scholarship money, and they work so hard for years to get to this point. And seeing kids in the show ring and adults alike in the show ring winning that grand champion ribbon is something that you can only really see here at State Fair, and it's so amazing. And then, of course, the All for One shows are also one of my favorites. We have a few shows for those with disabilities, and they get partnered with a fair exhibitor to kind of help them through that exhibitor process, and that's always so fun to see. Everyone's having a blast in that one.
Very cool. Tess Kirkson joining us from Wisconsin State Fair and the Milwaukee Mile. We'll talk about that event in a little bit. All right, so one of the areas of the fair, this is not surprising, especially anyone who has kids or grandkids, is Spin City. I spend a lot of money over there. Actually just use my debit card and pay for a lot of rides and all the games and stuff. That's back. That's bigger than ever, right?
Yes, let me tell you, get the wristbands. That's a
that's
huge
the trick,
savings. Huh? Every year we're like, why do we even still do the wristbands? That's crazy how many rides you get. So definitely get your wristbands at wistatefair.com in the meantime. But yes, we have some new rides coming to Spin City itself, but also one of our, what we call Off Midway, a ride that's going to be located outside of Spin City on South Grandstand. And that one is called the Skyscraper. Steve, it's like a windmill-style ride that goes up 160 feet, and you sit on these cabins at the end of it. I'm a little scared of that one. That's for the true thrill seekers. And that's going to be right next to the circus, too, the Circus Affair, which is another great attraction.
I will skip that, but I always go down the big slide with my grandkids, and we have a heck of a fun time doing that. All right, so if folks want to find out more about the fair, you got a great website. What's that? And then just the dates so everybody knows when to get out there.
Yes, so go to wistatefair.com, and this fair kicks off on Thursday, July 31st, and we'll run through Sunday, August 10th. We got to see everyone out here. We didn't even touch on the main stage shows, too, so much to see at Wisconsin State Fair.
All right, let's take a break on WTMJ Outdoors. Lots more happening out there, and this one is a fun one as well. IndyCar events, Milwaukee Mile 250, title sponsor, new one, Snap-on. We will get to all of that and more on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. We are joined by Tess Kirkson from Wisconsin State Fair Park and the Milwaukee Mile. All right, Tess, I'm not a huge racing fan, but I know people love this stuff. And you have a big IndyCar event, August 23rd and 24th. Snap on Milwaukee Mile 250. This is a very, very cool race and a great weekend. Let's start with the basics. When is it? How do folks find out about it?
Yes, so we do have an IndyCar race on August 23rd and August 24th. So the actual race takes place on the 24th. But of course, here at State Fair Park, we have to go big with everything. So we actually programmed a free fan zone. And so that is free, no admission ticket needed, to come and experience kind of the buzz that IndyCar brings to Milwaukee. It is intense. The haulers that come in with these trucks and these cars, the drivers and the celebrity that becomes, you know, comes with the drivers like Joseph Newgarden, who are becoming household names. It is electric. There's nothing else to it. And it's so much fun. So whether you're going to be in the grandstands on the 23rd and 24th, or you're coming to see the free fan zone, get that last bite of fair food for the summer, either way, you're going to have an incredible time at the staff on Milwaukee Mile 250. And plus, there's so many other options, too. You can add on garage passes to actually get up close and personal with not only the drivers, but the cars, too, and see inside their haulers. And it's just so cool.
I see on Saturday and Sunday you have autograph sessions, which is a great way for fans, especially young fans, to sort of meet the drivers and get a little bit of something they can hang on to.
Absolutely. And working with the IndyCar team and all of these drivers, I mean, these are great people to work with. They're fantastic role models. We've really loved working with so many of them. They come from such diverse background and have just made it in racing, and they're all just very cool. So to have kids come up to them who are so excited to meet them, whether it's the Indy 500 winner or any of the other their favorite race car drivers in their backyard here in Milwaukee, how cool is that? So we love being able to deliver that experience. And again, that autograph session too, it's not within the confines of the grandstand. It's out in the free fan zone. So that's really important to us too, to drive that value home.
So for folks that don't know the history of that great racetrack, you've been around forever. I actually get a kick out of every year when I'm parking to do the show out there that I get to, sometimes you get to drive on the track. I think that's just the most amazing thing ever. It's such a part of the lore of Wisconsin State Fair Park and this long, incredible history of racing out there.
It certainly is. And so we are the oldest operating 1 mile oval in the world. And so that's something we're really proud of. The legacy behind the Milwaukee Mile is quite incredible. The racing history, the folks that have raced on that oval is very historic. It's also a very flat oval, so it's difficult to drive, difficult on the drivers, and they actually really like that in tight turns. So it is a really fun track within the IndyCar schedule. A lot of people, when it came back last year, a lot of the drivers told us how much they loved this track. And so we really are proud of that. We've done a lot of improvements to it to secure races like IndyCar and other NASCAR races, and just to keep racing top of mind here in Milwaukee. So that's incredibly important to us. And we just love to kind of keep that legacy going of this historic Milwaukee Mile and the Fair Park as a whole.
Always want to give people the opportunity to get tickets. How do folks do that for these races?
Yes, we're going to keep it simple. WIStateFair.com. Once again, there's going to be a big red banner at the top of that. That's how you can get tickets to the grandstand and see this electric race. And what's so cool about our race, too, is it's not a street track or a street course where you wouldn't be able to see the whole race. You can actually sit in the grandstands and in one seat take in the entire race, which is not very common. You only really get that on oval tracks. And so it's a very fast-paced race. It's also the second to last of the season, so high points paying, and it's going to be a real nail biter.
And I see you actually have a deal for race fans who are 11 and under.
Yes. Again, we want to bring in the families. That is what is at our core at Wisconsin State Fair Park, and this race is no exception. So 11 and under are free GA tickets with their adults. So we do a lot of deals like that. We're also even programming a Zoom zone for the kids within the free fan zone. We definitely want to see families out here experiencing racing together, especially IndyCar racing, so they can come back year after year and kind of make this another tradition of summer.
Snap-on's Milwaukee Mile 250 coming up in August. We got this Wisconsin State Fair beginning in July. I will be out there broadcasting live on my show. Tess Kirkson, Director of Marketing and Communications for Wisconsin State Fair Park. I always enjoy the fair. It is my favorite outdoor event, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to put it on WTMJ Outdoors. We will see you at the fair and the race.
See you at the fair and the Milwaukee Mile 250. We'll see you there.
Thank you, Tess.
Thanks.
You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Hey, this is an interesting one because I had heard about this. Center of the state, Wisconsin Rapids, Ridges Golf Course, and something called, I call it night golf. We'll see what they call it. Max Goska joins us on the phone. Max, tell me about this night golf at Ridges Golf Course.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate you having me on. So we started this last year. It was our first year that we had this. I actually worked in Florida and Arizona a couple years back, and a few courses had them around where I lived. And I know that we have, like, pretty much nothing around here in the state with, like, stadium lights, so we threw up a couple stadium lights. A lot of local businesses helped us out, get it going, figuring out the logistics of it. And yeah, so now we just have stadium light golf on three of our holes. So you can do a, like a little loop. It's 10, 11, and 12. So you got 3, 6, or 9 holes you can play.
All right. So where is Rich's Golf Course? Everybody knows in the state that's thinking, okay, this is something I got to do. Where is Rich's Golf Course in Wisconsin Rapids?
Yeah, so we're located right in the center of the state in Wisconsin Rapids, right near Stevens Point, and about 15 minutes from Sand Valley.
All right, sort of at Sand Valley, the hot golf destination in the world, really now. I think it's top 10 for high end golfers, I guess is the way I'd put it. People fly into that course, but
yep.
so describe the experience. I have not seen it yet, and I'm actually going to be through that part of the state in the next month or two. But what it feels like, what it looks like, because you're lighting up three of the holes on the course, and you said stadium lighting. So what does that look and feel like?
Yeah, so if you are picture yourself at a football field or baseball diamond at night watching in the lights, that is basically what it looks like out on the golf course. So when you hit your shot, you can see your ball the entire time. You're not playing with a glow ball. You're playing with a normal golf ball, so it flies normal. You're not playing this glow ball stuff. So, yeah, hitting a normal golf ball, you can see it go. You can actually see it better in the night than you can during the day. And we did our three holes starting right from our patio, so most nights we'll have, on a Friday nights, you'll have live music, so you'll be teeing off right in front of the band and the people, and
no pressure
cheering you on. So it's a fun shot there. So yeah, we got par 4, par 3, and par 5. So you get to use all your clubs.
What's been the reaction of golfers so far? I mean, I imagine this is pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. So actually, as of right now, we're only open on Fridays and Saturdays for it, because that's when most people are able to go out that late at night. But we do get a few people that will. Bigger groups coming from that actually are playing at Sand Valley, that course just down the road. And we have a set price for a weekday, so you can buy out the whole course for the night at a certain price. So we are getting groups. I mean, everyone that plays it loves it. It's just a cool feeling. You can hear all the crickets, the frogs, everything at night is just a totally different golf experience.
You got a lot of wildlife up there as well. So if folks want to find out, give me the website and or phone number so we can get people to sort of figure out what they might be able to do at night golf in the Wisconsin Rapids.
Yeah, so our website has a night golf slash up on top. So you can just go to that, click on that. That will give you all the information. We actually have a video up there as well. So you can get a feel of what it actually looks like, and that's pretty cool. And then that will tell you the pricing and what number to call to book your tee times.
What's the website?
Website is theridgesgolfcourse.com.
All right, and do you want them to call or just go through the website?
Well, if you go to the website, you'll find a number, but our number for the pro shop is where you do book all night golf tee times, which is 715-424-3204.
All right, Max, I know you know your way around a golf course. You're a very talented golfer as well. So what do you make of this resurgence of that part of the state? Obviously, Sand Valley has a lot to do with it, but that is really up the game when it comes to central Wisconsin golf.
Yes, I feel like central Wisconsin has really become a hub for golf. We have a lot of good golf courses, especially with Sand Valley. It just keeps growing and growing. I think they're on their number 6 course right now. But yeah, people are just kind of flocking to this part of the state, and a lot of people like to get to experience that night golf, which you don't get to experience anywhere else in the state.
I know you guys had some storms come through there that caused a little havoc for your golf course. Tell me about it.
Yeah, we actually just had a storm. We had actually a huge golf outing on the course, 44 groups. We got about 70% of them off the course. We had straight line winds with about 70 to 80 trees down.
Wow.
Luckily everyone got to shelter, but yeah, it was about a week process just to get the big stuff off the course. And I know we have a bunch of little stuff still out there, but course is looking nice. It's looking pretty good right now.
All right. One more time on the night golf. Where do folks find that website?
Yep. So you go right to our website, which is theridgesgolfcourse.com.
Max Goska, always great to talk to you. Maybe we'll see you on the course sometime this summer.
Yes, appreciate you having me on as well. Appreciate it.
All right, you're listening to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of WTMJ Outdoors. Thanks to the great sponsors and our partners at Outdoor Living Unlimited. They make it easy and they make it fun, and they have certainly all things outdoors. We'll be talking to Eric Brown from Outdoor Living Unlimited in some future episodes throughout the year. I want to thank my guests on today's program. We started off with Jeff Pritzel, Deer Program Specialist. How cool is that job for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources? Some changes in the forest zones in the state of Wisconsin. Sounds like, at least according to Jeff, the deer population are looking healthy as ever. Now, the downside of that, of course, is the mild winters, but those things tend to sort themselves out. And we will talk more with Jeff as we get closer and closer to the actual gun seasons, whether that's archery, which he told us is very, very popular, passing up the popularity of gun deer season, perhaps. So Jeff started the program off. We had a lot of fun talking to Tess Kirkson. I know it's a broad definition of WTMJ Outdoors, but you cannot talk about outdoors without talking about the Wisconsin State Fair. It is the signature event for the state of Wisconsin right there in beautiful West Allis and along I-94 going east and west from the downtown in Milwaukee. But it's one of those cool things, and of course we're connected at WTMJ because we get to work and broadcast from there. And I look forward to that again this year. I think it's my eighth or ninth season out at the Wisconsin State Fair Park. Looking at the new, as Tess told us today, the Dairy Building, as they're calling it, formerly the Cream Puff Building. Lots of exciting changes there. And I've said over and over again to all the leadership at the Wisconsin State Fair, it looks absolutely spectacular out there. Every year, they've done a great job with their landscaping, their hardscaping, their flowers, and their vendors. It's always a highlight of everybody's summer, so I wanted to make sure that we included that as part of our outdoors experience. That and everything else is part of what makes this story so great. And we wrapped up today's episode with a conversation with Max Goska from the Ridges Golf Course in Wisconsin Rapids. Really cool innovation happening there, and he told us about it. Night golf, they've taken three of their holes, the one closest to the clubhouse, which I think is number 10, and they've lit the holes up for nighttime golf. Not a glow ball, as Max told us, but an actual lighting of the fairways, lighting of the green areas, and making it possible to experience golf just like you do during the daytime. In the evening, in beautiful central Wisconsin, and we talked a little bit with Max about the popularity of golf in that part of the state. And overall, Wisconsin is certainly sort of getting national and international attention when you're talking about places like Sand Valley and others, some of the other great courses, Whistling Straits and the Kohler courses. Amazing stuff happening in Wisconsin outdoors. Always fun doing these shows. All right, so I say this at the end of every week's show. WTMJ Outdoors is where you can find us. WTMJ, of course, the broadcast side. And we often have it available earlier on the podcast page at WTMJ.com. Just go to our website, go to the podcast, and then click on WTMJ Outdoors. You can find it there. But I always make this ask. If you have an outdoor story, whatever it is, could be a favorite resort, could be an activity or an experience that you want us to talk about on WTMJ Outdoors. Happy to do it with you for all of our enjoyment. It's one of the great things about living in the great state of Wisconsin. Great place on a great lake, as they say. Thanks again to Outdoor Living Unlimited. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors on 620 WTMJ.